You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jane Gardam has said that her recent trilogy of novels deals not just with the stories of distinguished British barristers living in Hong Kong and their loves and losses, but also with the end of empire. She's one of Britain's most highly regarded contemporary authors, the only novelist who have received two prestigious Whitbread Awards, and was awarded the Order of the British Empire, but it has taken time for her books to find an audience in this country. The latest in her trilogy, which began with Old Filth and continued with The Man in the Wooden Hat, is called Last Friends. They're published by Europa Editions, and I'm very pleased to welcome Ms. Gardam to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
Last Friends focuses on the story of Terry Veneering. He is a barrister who practiced in Hong Kong before retiring to a village in Dorset, England. Is it just a coincidence that he's moved next door to his longtime professional and romantic rival, the man they call Old Filth?
Well, it depends what you mean by coincidence, and if you believe in coincidence, it's a very strange thing to happen. I had to make it plausible. I hope I did. And they didn't see each other, hated each other, but they didn't see each other because their houses were out of sight. They were one was up a hill and round a corner, the other was down in a dip.
And some writers are more comfortable with coincidence than others. Dickens, for example, quite comfortable. Dickens, a writer you admire a lot, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, I do.
You even named Terry after Dickens.
Yes, but it's very sad for my Veneering to be called Veneering, because Dickens is Veneering's nasty man, and mine is not a nasty man, but it came to me as a possible, because of that child's background. He was Slav, half Slav, and he came most mysteriously to England, and no one up in North Yorkshire could say his name, which may have been Vernetsky or Varensky or anything. And it was a school teacher who said, call yourself Veneering, it's a good strong name, which he did.
Now, being called Old Filth isn't so nice, but we should explain that stands for Failed in London, Try Hong Kong.
Yes, that's a terrible thing to say to anyone. But it's been said for 200 years about people as a sort of joke in England.
Now, how did you come to know this incestuous world of British expats so well? Were you in Hong Kong yourself?
Oh, yes. I was married to a barrister who is unlike anyone in my books, because although he was a distinguished barrister, I suppose, Queen's Counsel, all that, he was by nature a painter. And wherever we went, we took the turpentine and the paints. But most of his practice was in Hong Kong and Singapore and Bangladesh and in the Orient.
In construction law?
That's right.
The same as Filth and
Veneering? Yes. Yes, he did no crime, and he didn't become a judge either, my husband, because he said he could never. There was the death penalty in those days, and he could never condemn anyone to death.
And you had to if a jury decided.
Oh, yes, that. You had.
You say that Filth and Veneering were experts in the ethics of pollution. What does that mean? Is that a real legal specialty?
No.
You made that up.
I made it up. I think it'll be coming, though, because there's plenty of pollution, and it's got to be dealt with. No, that was me. Mm.
Well, in parts of England, pollution actually has improved. For example, in the north, in a city like Leeds, which used
enormously
to just be filled with coal dust.
Oh, and I was brought up on Teesside, which was filled with coal dust, and that's what I'm writing about a good bit in this book, which is now pure and lovely.
But as I mentioned, you've said that the true topic of your books is the end of empire.
I suppose it's the sort of person who has faded away, almost now, I think almost gone, and I think that my man, I called Old Filth, was a superb example of such a person. There were some pretty awful ones.
Well, it was really difficult for Britain to accept the fact after World War II that the empire was really lost to it.
I think we were pretty thoughtful, though, by then. About it, we'd realized before that it was history. Now it was fading.
Well, except Hong Kong,
we
loved held
Hong
on
Kong.
To it for a long, much longer time.
Well, we had a contract with them, you know, and the contract was over. We went out with dignity.
It was a contract that Britain had really forced upon China.
So you say. I don't know. I've been reading a lot of the early days. Also, I found in Singapore a tremendous affection for Raffles, and for, I know they wanted to take a photograph of my husband standing beside the Raffles Memorial, which surprised me.
You began Old Filth with the epigraph, "Lawyers, I suppose, were children once." And
yes,
certainly childhood is very important for you. Filth, as we find out in the first book, was what you call a Raj orphan.
Yes.
So that was, he was an orphan of the Raj that, of course, ended when Britain gave up the Indian subcontinent.
Yes, it's still going on that children are sent back whose parents work in India to be educated in England because it's considered to be so much safer. In fact, about 200 years we sent our children home from India, and I think most of the time we need not have done. I think terrible things happened. And it's extremely sad for mothers to say goodbye to their little ones when they were four, not see them again perhaps till they were 10.
Well, as a child, he had to endure various horrors at the hands of a sadistic caretaker called Ma Dids. Your work has often been called, as I mentioned earlier, Dickensian. Were you thinking about Dickens when you did that?
Actually, no, I wasn't. I was thinking about Kipling, because Kipling had exactly the experience of my little boy. But being a genius, I think it was harder. And in fact, Kipling went mad, pretty well insane as a little boy, in a, how's he called, the House of Desolation, where he was cared for. And he also went nearly blind. All his life he wore great, heavy, horn-rimmed spectacles, and he was a strange little boy and a strange person, but a I've come to think of him as a marvellous writer.
Well, saved by writing.
Oh, utterly, yes. And by reading, he discovered years later that the books that he'd read and saved his life and his sanity as a little boy, they had been sent by his father. Oh, his mother, I think. He had no idea where they came from. He just read and read.
The second book in the series focused on Betty Feathers, Filth's wife of 50 years. She was born in China and spent World War II in a Japanese internment camp in Shanghai, where both of her parents died. Do the childhoods of your characters influence the choices that they make when they get older?
Oh, I think the childhoods are very important in every one of my books. Dickens said, you know, you must never let the childhood out of sight of any of your characters. And I feel the same, actually.
The childhood kind of determines who we become.
Oh,
even
it's
if
so important.
It's a surprising, we surprise in the end?
Well, I think I have also said that what happens after they've left home, when they're after 10, it is a teacher. It's nearly always a teacher who has done the best for them. And the hundreds of letters I've had from old gentlemen, mostly, not girls, they seem to have survived better, have said that only a school teacher has helped.
My guest is Jane Gardam, G-A-R-D-A-M. Her latest book, the third novel in the Old Filth trilogy, is called Last Friends. How does this book carry on the trilogy?
Well, it's a good question, because I've already killed off my heroes in the other books. But we do have their, just to remind people, we have their memorial services again. And it's really the ones that are left for the last book.
And Veneering, as you said, had a foreign name. His father was a member of a Russian circus troupe.
Yes.
So how does he manage to become a barrister?
Ha-ha, well, you must read the book. It's very, very complicated. And it's also very unlikely, you would say, that a Russian Cossack dancer turned up in Teesside in the 30s and produced with a local woman this strange little boy. And I think it was. But everyone said, yes, but there would never have been Russians there, not in the 30s. And I said, oh, Lord. And I began to read history like mad. And I said, well, but I saw them. I know they were there. And nobody would believe me. And then I was having lunch with Margaret Drabble, who's a dame, who's one of our biggest writers and hardest workers for literature. And she lived up there. She's younger than me. She lived up there. She said, Jane, don't worry. I saw them. They did come. There were Russian dancers then, which was very exciting.
Are these characters based on people you knew or inspired by people you knew?
I don't think so.
This is all just...
I think not.
What fiction is in its purest form and total invention of yours?
Well, I couldn't have done it if I hadn't lived in the places. And one or two of the characters I knew, yes, but not the big ones, no.
Well, you've also said that you wanted to write about Betty Feathers in The Man in the Wooden Hat because you found her boring and you needed to find out more about her.
Well, I think that's true of almost everyone. I think everyone's as really, I've learned in my great age, I think everyone's as interesting as everyone else, you know.
Who were the best friends of the title?
Of this title, the last friends.
The last friends.
Well, Filth is dead.
Did I say best friends? Oh, my.
Well, the last friends, who are your best friends? You're quite right. It's you never know who the friends are going to be in old age. They're usually the people you've known for years and taken completely for granted and not particularly liked. And then in old age, they become indispensable to you and quite funny.
Other characters in this book are Dulcie, the widow of a Hong Kong judge who lives in the village where Filth retired to, and a lawyer named, I love this name, Fred Fiscal Smith, who's described as one born to be a background figure.
Yes.
Fiscal, is that a name?
No, I made him up. No, it walked into my head, and it suited him because he was a fiscal sort of person and very dry, and I've tried to show him, as I say, is a bit more interesting because everyone is more interesting than they look.
He, at one point, Fiscal Smith reflects, one should take a long, hard look at old friends, like old clothes in a cupboard that comes a moment to examine for moth, perhaps throw them out and forget them.
Well, that's a crude thing to say, isn't it? But there is some truth in it.
We've all been faced with that problem where we have old friends. We hold on for sentimental value even though we have very little in common.
But maybe it's all love and that's what it should all be about.
These books have a great deal to do with relationships and what goes unsaid, even in our most important relationships. How well do we get to know your characters who are often impenetrable to each other?
Oh, what a difficult question. I think it's even more difficult in England because we don't express ourselves to each other as much as perhaps we should or as the Americans do. I think it has to be shown through acts. And in this, the two old things who are comic characters and minor characters do achieve love. But I'm not telling you any more.
Well,
because
one
it's
of the
end
ways,
of the story.
One of the ways that you reveal it is by writing the same scene with different perspectives.
Exactly.
It's not a Rashomon approach. The basic facts of the scene are the same, but we're seeing it through the eyes of the different characters.
But that's so interesting to do.
And when you started writing this trilogy, was that something that you had in mind from the start?
Oh, heavens no. I didn't think of a trilogy. I didn't think of a novel. I was rung up by a magazine called The Oldie, who said, we need a short story by Christmas. And I said, this was Richard Ingram's of Private Eye. I said, I can't do that. It's November already. He said, come on, Jane, you can do it on your head. And this was so flattering that I sat down and I wrote it. And that story made me think that I'm interested in these old types of English. Well, they're not upper class, you see. This is what they're not. They're lawyers, and the wonderful thing about the law is it is classless in any country, or should be.
Mm-hmm. There are a few professions that are. In England, where, although many of the top barristers do come from upper-middle-class families because they've gone to the better schools.
Exactly. They are well-educated because they have had, but not by any means all. I should say a very small proportion now.
Now, your narrative structure is somewhat unconventional. You include correspondence, flashbacks, snippets from screenplays. You keep on moving between the past and the present. Do you write it in chronological? Do you write it in order and then and just go back and forth?
I never go back and forth. No, I don't go back and forth in collages. I just see what should come next.
The Old Filth was your eighth novel, and written when you were 76 years old.
That's right. I don't know how old I was. Well, a long time ago, anyway.
You had given up writing for a time?
Not really, no.
Because that's what I heard. You gave it up when you had your first child and then picked it up.
Oh, that was ages ago.
Yeah.
That was a million years ago. Yes, I found it difficult to work when I had small children because I had a husband who was always in Hong Kong and I had a lot to do.
Your own background was not upper middle class. Your father
farming.
Was a school teacher and a farmer?
He came from farming people. My brother is also a farmer. My cousins are farmers. He was a schoolmaster at a very snobbish school in the Northeast. He was a wonderful teacher of mathematics. I don't think he thought he was that. We didn't think in that way, whether we were upper class or not.
Well, I lived in England for a time, and it struck me that class was always present, that I was lucky because, as an American, I was classless or didn't have class.
This was the 60s, wasn't it? You were there. Yes, I think you'd find a difference now.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Another novelist said that you write like a 25-year-old with the wisdom and subtlety of a razor-sharp 100-year-old. Do you see that? What does it mean to write like a 25-year-old?
I haven't the faintest idea. I'm much nearer to 100 than I am to 25. But I think I write as myself. And does the self change so much throughout life? I don't know.
The irony in one of these characters, Old Filth, is that when he becomes successful, they say, oh, nothing's ever happened to him in his life.
That's right.
And then, of course, you prove them
this
wrong.
This long and a happy marriage, yes, and nothing. He's gone. And that's what I think the old-fashioned English like to imply, that they've had a steady, good life and you don't ask for any secrets. You certainly wouldn't have got any secrets out of Old Filth. He would have calmly ignored them.
Been very circumspect.
Very circumspect, yes.
I read that you became a literary guerrilla several years back. You posted poems around the town of Sandwich.
You did hear that, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So have you gotten the populace excited about poetry?
Oh, I hope so, yes. The town's full of poems. It worked like a dream, and I do recommend it to anyone who lives in a small town. We put up about 40 poems without telling anyone what they're for or where they come from, not a word. And now I heard someone say in the town, it's a small town, where it's time for the poems again. After all, they are a tradition. Only 2 years of it.
Jane Goddam is the only writer to have been awarded the Whitbread Prize for Best Novel of the Year twice. She has written how many novels altogether now?
I've no idea.
Well, but there is...
About nine. No, I think 10.
There is the trilogy... last of which is Last Friends, which is available from Europa Editions. I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.